Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Technion Israel Institute of Technology is where some of Israel's brightest minds ask the biggest question of all. What if? What if they could take on the world's biggest challenges? What if they could develop life-changing environmental, scientific, health, medical, and technological discoveries that will make a huge impact on Israel and the planet? But they don't just ask the question, they answer it too. They turn those ideas into reality. They make them happen. To see just some of the incredible things they've achieved, get the Technion Booklet of Wonders at ats.org/wonders. We hope it inspires you to give them your support so they can keep doing what they do best. The American Technion Society. World-changing discoveries by Israel's brightest minds, made possible by you.
Hey listeners, it's Mishi. Last week we released our 50th wartime diary. This week is Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut. And as a way of marking this milestone, and these dates, Yochai Meital and I will have a series of onstage conversations in New York and Cleveland. We'll discuss the process of creating wartime diaries, talk about some of the challenges we've encountered, the dilemmas we've had, the insights we've gained. So if you want to hear what covering the evolving story of this war has been like for us, we'd love to see you at one of our events. All the details are on our site, israelstory.org. And meanwhile, wishing us all calm and peaceful days ahead.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey guys, it's Mishi. The world has obviously changed dramatically since we last released something on the feed. The coronavirus has created an unprecedented reality, linking us together in new ways and impacting each of us differently. It's bringing out an intense range of emotions, from anxiety and sadness to laughter and hope. We're all just trying to adjust to imagine an uncertain future. Our thoughts and prayers are with those who are suffering and struggling, those who have been laid off or sick, and mainly, of course, with those who have lost a loved one. Hopefully we're also learning some lessons about who and what is essential to society, about the resilience and altruism of regular people, about those who are privileged and those who are not, about how we should treat each other and our planet, about humility. Like everyone else, we look forward to a day when doing something as simple as going to someone's home to interview them doesn't seem like an impossible feat. But in the meantime, here we are, doing our best one day at a time. And as part of that attempt, in lieu of our normal spring live show tour, I want to invite you all to join us for a special Corona Days Yom HaAtzmaut extravaganza. On Wednesday, April 29th, Israel's 72nd Independence Day, we'll be hosting Israpalooza, a day-long virtual Zoom festival. Throughout the day, every hour on the hour, we'll explore different sides of Israel and Israeli culture. We'll have a session with world-famous violinist Yitzhak Perlman, a live concert with David Broza, talks with Starkitect Moshe Safdie, cookbook author and food anthropologist Joe Nathan, the inventor of the modern-day firewall Gil Shved, trailblazing Arab-Israeli news anchor Lucy Arish, a family-friendly self-portrait workshop with artist Hanoch Piven, a shakshuka cooking class with celebrity chef Nir Masika, and much more. So join us on Wednesday, April 29th, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, for a refreshing smorgasbord of Israeli tastes. Tickets are available at israpalooza.org. That's israpalooza.org. And going off script here for a minute, I'll just say in all honesty that these are difficult times for Israel's story financially. Like every other cultural organization, we're struggling. Our tour, which accounts for roughly a quarter of our annual budget, was obviously canceled. So we're trying in every possible way and as best we can to stay afloat. Your tickets are part of that. There's a suggested donation of $18 per person. You can pay less, or if you're feeling generous, you can also pay more. But that's $18 that give you a virtual wristband, a pass that allows you to come in and out of the event throughout the day. $18 that get you into concerts, workshops, classes, and talks with some of the most fascinating people around. So with one ticket, dear friends, you'll both be supporting Israel's story and celebrating Israel's Independence Day in a way I promise you, you've never done before. Okay, today, as many of you know, is Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Remembrance Day. Over the years, we've aired many stories and episodes that relate to the Holocaust. Just a few months ago, we introduced you to Rachel Sarati's beautiful series, We Share the Same Sky, which I can't recommend enough. But today, we wanted to replay an episode from 2017. An episode called A Severe Case of Second Generation. Here we go. Lizzie Doron is an Israeli author. She was born in the early 50s in Tel Aviv. And like many other kids of her generation who grew up with parents who had gone through the camps, Lizzie's childhood was filled with silence. Most of her questions about the family's past were just ignored. So her imagination kicked in. Or at least, so she thought. Maya Kosover brings us A Severe Case of Second Generation.
High above, on a hill, stood a pretty castle, tall and still. And in it lived a family that had been there for eternity. But nobody knows about this dynasty. The only one left to tell is me.
Okay, so I'm Lizzie Doron. Once upon a time I was Elizabeth. My mother wanted me to have a Gentile name, that I will have an option to leave the country and not to belong to the Jewish people. My last name was Ruja, after my father, but I never met my father.
Lizzie was born in 1953. She was raised in a small working-class neighborhood in South Tel Aviv.
I grew up just with my mom as an only child, and I was surrounded by neighbors. They all came from there, which means the Holocaust. It was a very warm, cozy, and crazy neighborhood.
More than 100 families lived there. Most of them had fled the Nazis. They had known each other from the ghettos, from the woods, from the camps. And now they were together again, here, in Tel Aviv. So this neighborhood, you can imagine, wasn't quite like other neighborhoods. It had its own rituals and traditions. At night, people would step out into the streets, let loose, and relive their traumatic memories.
Every night, I just looked through the window, and it was around 12 o'clock that one of them ran in the streets shouting, I am in Bergen-Belsen, I am in Bergen-Belsen. There was another woman that when she did shower to her son, suddenly she felt that it's a gas chamber, and she pushed him from the bathroom and she ran with him in the streets, and the child was naked. So there were few neighbors who stood there with towels just to cover the small child.
מי הוא המפלל לנוח ואינו יכול?
Little Elizabeth would stand by the window, hidden by the curtains, and collect scattered bits of information.
These were my bedtime stories.
But in her own home, there was nothing but silence. She often tried to ask, to inquire, but her tight-lipped mother, Helena, wouldn't cooperate.
I asked her where she came from, and it was just a short answer from the Holocaust. When I asked her, why aren't you celebrating your birthday? She used to answer, because I'm a dead walking person. When I wanted to know something about my father, she said that anyhow he's far away. And I didn't know whether that meant that he left or died.
Alongside her evasive answers, Helena had her own unique rituals.
She used to go to synagogue just during Yom Kippur.
She would slip into the Ezrat Gvarim, the men's section, wearing a talit.
And then instead of what is in the Jewish tradition to ask God to forgive us for our sin, she stood there and demanded that God will ask her to forgive him. And she mentioned all the names of the family that she lost during the Holocaust, counting 69 names.
Once she was done, Helena would notify the other people in shul that now, and only now, could they go back to praying to their God.
But not before taking out from her pocket a huge sandwich with schinken and cheese. And when everybody was staring at her, she said, listen, I suffered enough. This is my celebration day. Now I'm free to decide for my own, and I never be hungry again. And then she ate the sandwich and left the synagogue.
At home, Helena and Elizabeth were surrounded by secrets and question marks. Yet still, throughout her childhood, little Elizabeth had a strange feeling that she wasn't alone. That someone was looking at her, following her. She would occasionally see a face peering through her classroom window, peeking in and then immediately disappearing. And one day she was on her way to the center of town with a bunch of friends.
We were on the bus and I saw someone that is running behind the bus and looking at me. It was the same face that I saw from time to time at school through the window.
Elizabeth told her friends she had a headache and got off the bus. But actually, she went on a manhunt, looking for this boogeyman of hers. She searched for hours, checking behind every tree, bush, and building in the neighborhood. But she came up empty-handed. When she finally got home, she didn't mention any of it to her mother. And in general, as she grew up, Elizabeth's relationship with her mom became more and more tense. When she was 18, a young soldier fell in love with her.
He knocked on the door, and of course he came with the gun and with the uniform.
Helena stared at the young suitor and asked,
how many Arabs did you kill? And she shut the door on his face. And I stood in the middle of the room. I looked at her and I said, but I'm in love. And he is the son of one of the chief generals in the Israeli army. And then she said, that's the reason I don't want him to enter this house. And then I said to myself, okay, this is the time to take a suitcase and to leave.
Elizabeth ran away as far as she possibly could, all the way to a kibbutz on the Golan Heights. Her new home represented the proud, militaristic and machoistic Israel her European mother so despised. There, she worked the land and joined the Gar'in Nachal, a group that went into the army together. That's where she got a new, snappier name, Lizzie. Lizzie from Kibbutz Ramot.
I was the one who was ready to work in the kitchen and to be with all those soldiers during the nights on the borders. I read just books about Israeli wars and Israeli heroes. I used to go with gun as if it's my earrings or my necklace. I felt that I'm the Israeli Hannah Senesh.
3 years later, when the Yom Kippur War broke out, Lizzie's kibbutz fantasy was shattered. 7 of her closest friends were killed on the first day of the war. Shocked, she returned home to her mother.
I entered my home after 3 years that I didn't meet my mom. I opened the door. I ran to my room. I closed the door. She was clever enough not to ask anything.
The trauma of losing so many friends led her onto a new path. Once again, searching for a new identity, for new roots, she enrolled in the university and met Danny. They fell in love, and it quickly became serious.
I called my mom. I asked her to behave well. She promised. And we went to visit her. And as usual, when she opened the door, she looked at him and she had to ask him, "What was your job in the army?"
Danny stood at the door and sheepishly said that he had been a truck driver.
And my mother had a wide smile on her face. And she looked at me and she said, "I think you found your husband." I wanted to kill her.
When Danny left, Lizzie asked her mom why she was so obsessed with what her boyfriends did in the army. For once, she got an answer.
Killing somebody else changed your soul and changed your inner world. And she dreamt that my husband will be a man that didn't kill anyone. And he will be the one who will get from her permission to bring her a grandsons and daughters.
A week later, Lizzie and Danny were engaged. They had 2 kids, a daughter and then a son. Lizzie went on to get a master's degree. Life seemed stable, calm. But in 1990, Helena had a sudden stroke. Lizzie rushed to the hospital.
The head of the emergency room started to ask me questions. "How old is your mother?" And then I said, "I don't know." "Where she came from?" And I said, "I don't know."
The doctor was surprised.
Then he asked what she suffered from. And I said, "Nightmares." And he said, "Listen, you look as a serious person, so I have to get the information to know how to treat her."
He asked if anyone in her family had died of an illness.
And I said, no, in my family, everybody died healthy. And then he was very confused and he said, "What's that mean and what's the reason of the death of your family?" And I said, "Gas chambers."
The doctor asked Lizzie if she knew how her mom got the massive scar across her belly. Lizzie repeated what she had always been told, that it was from an appendicitis her mom had had in Auschwitz.
And he looked at me and he said, "Listen, Lizzie, are you saying in Auschwitz they did an appendix operation? Do you think about another alternative?" And I said, "Such as." And then he looked at me and asked, "Do you have any brothers, sisters?"
The doctor knew the scar was from a C-section. But Lizzie told him she was an only child and that she had been born a natural birth. He realized that she really didn't know anything about her mom's past. He called the psychiatrist into the room.
And he whispered to the other doctor, listen, we have a severe case of second generation. And then I looked and I said, I'm not a severe case of anything and I'm not second generation. I was born in Israel and I'm an Israeli.
After 7 long months in the hospital, Helena passed away.
שרים כולם כך זולג זולג על הלכי עצר העולם.
A few years later, Dana, Lizzie's daughter, got an assignment from school to create a family tree. She asked a ton of questions about the family, but just like her mom before her, Lizzie didn't have many answers. So Lizzie returned to her childhood neighborhood in South Tel Aviv and talked to some of the old neighbors.
Mihu, mihu.
She sat down with an elderly woman who had been friendly with her mom.
Mihu, mihu.
And I wanted her to tell me about my father. And she said, I have in my album a picture in which I see your father is looking at you. It was a Purim celebration. And he was beyond the trees. And she showed me the picture.
Lizzie recognized that photo. She had seen it many times before. In it, her giggly 5-year-old self is standing in front of a tall hedge. She's smiling a toothy smile, completely oblivious to the presence of a middle-aged man hiding behind the hedge, looking at her. She had never noticed that guy beforehand. And now, she realized that that man was her father. The father she had never met.
Because his face was hidden by the leaves, I never noticed it. When I did, I just knew that this was the man I had seen following me, looking into our classroom and running after that bus.
Mihu, mihu, mihu.
At the age of nearly 50, Lizzie finally started putting together the pieces of the mysterious puzzle which was her father. He had survived the camps and arrived in Israel alone, battling tuberculosis. Back then, Helena was a nurse on a kibbutz, in charge of giving all the newcomers their medical examinations.
And one day, this sick man came and told her that his last wish was to die as a kibbutz member. So my mom kept his secret.
When the kibbutz found out he was sick, they asked him to leave, at once. This reminded Helena of other selections she had witnessed, and she couldn't remain silent.
She was not going to let this man die alone.
So they both left the kibbutz and moved in together in Tel Aviv. 2 years later, shortly after Helena became pregnant, his tuberculosis took a turn for the worse. He moved into a sanitarium, and the doctors said it was a matter of months. But he ended up living for 8 more years. On better days, when he had enough strength to make it into Tel Aviv, he would watch his little girl from afar, like an invisible ghost, hiding behind hedges, bushes, or closed windows. Lizzie later found out that everyone in the neighborhood knew about him.
Everyone but me.
Dana's family tree project turned into a book, Lizzie's first. It was especially popular in Germany, and her life today is divided between Tel Aviv and Berlin. I carry the pain of both lands, she once told me. The final chapter of this saga came a few years ago, when a friend of Lizzie's, a German non-Jewish journalist, handed her a large manila envelope. Inside, she quickly discovered were the answers to all those questions her mother had been silent about her entire life.
After my mom survived Auschwitz, she was sent to a war camp. She nearly died there, and there was a doctor, a Nazi, who felt compassion for her and saved her. After the war, this doctor was sentenced to death, and my mom traveled to Poland, took the witness stamp and said, you know, the Jews say, whoever saved a single life, it's like he saved the entire world. So I ask you to spare this man because he saved me.
The Nazi wasn't ultimately executed. Helena had saved his life. And during her testimony, which Lizzie was now reading, Helena unfolded her entire story.
She said, my name is Helena Hordorf. I came from Przewoz. I was in Plaszów, in Auschwitz, in Skorzecki Kamienna, in Buchenwald. I lost my husband in the war. I had two sons, but I don't know what happened to them. My mom had always said I was her only daughter.
Maya Kosover.
Ten li rak siba achat tova leishaer. Hasfina kvar tovat, hayam makif oti mikol hakivunim. Az ten li rak siba achat.
The original music for this story, including the song playing right now, was composed and performed by the wonderfully talented Hazelnuts, Shira Z. Carmel, Ifat Ziv, and Rani
Wagner.
That was our 2017 Yom HaShoah episode. And here we are, just 3 years later, in such a different world. We can't wait to see you all at Israpalooza, our Yom HaTzmaut day-long Zoom festival. April 29th, 2020, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern. Go to israpalooza.org to get your tickets. See you there, shalom shalom, and yalla bye.
Ten li rak siba achat tova leishaer. Hasfina kvar tovat, hayam makif oti mikol hakivunim. Az ten li rak siba achat.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.